Welcome to the Hardware Asylum Podcast. Due to social distancing and travel restrictions, Darren and I did something different for this month's episode and recorded a vidcast. You can view it on the Hardware Asylum YouTube channel or listen to it here in its entirety. The audio is a bit crunchy and mostly unedited. We hope you enjoy, and ultimately, let us know what you think.
Welcome back to another social distancing podcast.
Yay, we are still locked away for this podcast extra.
Yeah. Now, if you were able to catch our main show, you'll know why we are doing this new format. And we're experimenting because we could do this as a standard audio podcast like what we normally do. But we thought, hey, since we are not in the same room and we can hook up cameras, why not do something like this?
We have the technology, and we thought you guys might like to see us. Now, of course, that means that this is very raw, very unedited, and that means you get to see us take a drink, scratch our face, reach for stuff off camera, all the stuff that you normally would not see or hear.
Yeah, and the ums and the ahs. And the audio is slightly different because we're basically talking into, well, I'm talking into a webcam. And Darren,
I'm using my gaming headset that I would normally use for playing games online or a LAN party.
Speaking of games, since we have been home, you know, we've been playing a little bit of 7 Days to Die lately, which is kind of fun.
Well, yeah, a lot more than we have been. If you haven't read or listened to any of our conversations about 7 Days to Die, I would highly encourage it. Not just because it's an ironic take on our current virus woes, but because it's a great game, and they've finally started to fix some of our complaints about the last round of code. So it's becoming, I think, way more playable and back to being fun again.
I would agree. But you had a casualty.
I did. So I am also working from home, which means that I am spending, 7, 10, 15 hours if I'm gaming in front of my home PC, which isn't too bad. But I lost this, Dennis.
Oh, we've had that for a while.
So for many years, I have been doing mouse reviews. And as you know, I compare always to my Rokat Kone XTD, my very favorite mouse. And I hope you can see this fairly well in the camera. But as you can see, it's a larger mouse. It is a Palm mouse, which I love. It's got nice RGB. This is my second or third generation of these, and I adore them. But lately, as you know, we haven't seen a lot of gaming peripherals come through from some of the high-end manufacturers because they're now relatively well-established, and Rokat is no exception. The Rokat folks are making a lot of new and improved products. So I endeavored to replace it with a mouse from the lab and couldn't find one that I liked that had that same shape or feel. So I did what I had to in the lockdown, Dennis. I traded toilet paper for a mouse. No. I purchased their latest version. I want to, for the record, point out that I was looking for a newer version of that cone. That's out on the market, and it has already been replaced with this guy. Let's see if we can get it out of the glare here for you. So this is the latest in the Kone family. So Rokat, you owe me one for this freebie, because this is the Rokat Kone Amio edition, and it is what I'm using for this podcast. So there it is.
Oh,
the RGB flowing and the whole nine yards. So we got to get it in front of the camera. So a little bit of a comparison in size.
Nope, other direction. There we go.
Maybe that's not helping. There you go. That's better. Yeah. So as you can see, the old mouse is a little bit bigger than the new mouse, barely. So not a bad one-to-one fit.
Does it have the weights?
No, it doesn't. It's relatively lightweight. It has a newer sensor, the OWL sensor. So let me see if I can tell you a little bit about it in sort of a mini review. Of course, it has the Amio lighting, which we'll talk about in a minute. Programmable buttons, up to 24 different programmable choices if you use their shift technology, which is built into the driver. Oh, he's Googling.
Cone.
It has adjustable polling distance, reset, feedback, the whole 9 yards. But it will do DPI up to 16,000 DPI. There you go. Hey, that's a great picture from their website. And as you can see, it's pretty affordable.
Yeah, it's 70 bucks. Not bad. Yeah.
And I'm going to tell you that, like a lot of things right now, that's MSRP, but because the slowdown is happening, you might find a good sale on it. Yeah, that's a little bit better than me showing it up in front of the camera. So see, there you go, the bottom, no weights.
No weights.
Got some pretty good skates on it. Larger lighting, as you see there, showing up around the thumb buttons and on the right side. No skirt lighting in this edition, but it's a great-looking mouse. So I've been on this now for 4 or 5 days, both work and play.
Oh.
I can tell you that I like it. I am still getting used to it being a tiny bit smaller, and I'm wondering now if that is in my mind. But I want to talk a little bit specifically about what makes it different from all of my current Rocket products, including that XDD, is it uses AMIO lighting. So as you're looking at this, maybe there's a video. I don't know. But you will see.
I don't know if there's a video. It's a gallery.
That the lighting has a standard edition, which is what I'm doing right now. You can see if you go back to my camera real quick that it's breathing, which is my favorite mode, and it's blue to match my my Rocket keyboard that I've got here.
Rocket.
Did I say Rocket again? Rocket. I know, it's like I'm French or something.
Everyone says Rocket, and they should just change their name or spell it correctly.
Rocket. Kind of makes sense to me. So it's a great looking mouse. Two complaints about it though. I know.
Two.
One,
oh
of course,
gosh,
is there's no adjustable weight, which you already handle. And two is the thumb button design, which you can kind of see in that picture there on the left. They stand out, which means that if you are raising your hand up, which a lot of us do when we're moving the mouse aggressively, it is possible to accidentally hit a thumb button. And they're very sensitive, which is probably a good thing once you get used to it. So you can see the indent there underneath that where you would normally hold this thing. But as you arch your hand a little bit to lift and push, there is a chance to hit that button. So what was happening, Dennis, is in Battlefield 5, my favorite game, I was having liftoff issues where I was trying to snipe. And I would use my right mouse button to zoom in. And then as I'm fine-tuning, moving the mouse around to get that headshot from a distance at a lower GPU, which is something very cool about on-the-fly GPU adjustability. I would take a shot and then accidentally switch to the knife and melee nothing.
Oh.
Which leaves you standing on a hill holding a knife while everybody else brought their guns to the gunfight. So
that's not good. Oh, no good.
The AMIO lighting, I think, deserves a little bit of a conversation, too, because this is my first experience with it, and I hope I'm pronouncing it right. But what it is AI-controlled lighting across their infrastructure. So that's a great picture there, because you can see their Con headset and their current line of keyboards. There's 4 or 5 of them use the AMIO intelligent lighting system. And what it does, Dennis, is it controls the light for you.
Ooh.
Adjusting it to match your activity level, what's showing on your screen, I think, and I don't even know what else. It's something I've just started to play with, and it does not sync with my older keyboard products, so I was forced to manually get them to match while I debate whether I want to pursue one of the new keyboards. So hopefully if they're out there listening, they can fulfill that IOU for this beautiful mouse review by sending me a keyboard. But even if they don't, I think it's fair to say that when you have access to so much keys and mice and headsets as I do, I think it's very telling when you see us at home, as Dennis and I are now, the equipment that we're actually using is not always what you think it would be based on our reviews, because we review some really great products, but we do tend to gravitate towards our favorites. What do you got?
Oh, this is there? The Logitech G5. No, the G502 Hero.
Oh, yay.
And look at this. It's got weights.
Oh, I do miss the weights a little bit. That's taking some getting used to. But it's a great product, and investing in the infrastructure is something that we've talked about a lot lately. And since I'm a huge Rocket Mouse fan, I still use their mechanical keyboard. I believe this is the Ishiku. It's a little bit older one, and it's larger, but I adore it. And what am I using? I'm using a glass core pad that's probably as old as my children, Dennis.
You've had that thing for years and years and years.
I am a huge fan of glass mouse pads, and they're not very popular anymore. Very hard to find one out there these days.
Yeah. At one point, we looked into doing a Hardware Asylum mouse pad that was glass, and that was not easy to try and find somebody that would do that.
So, yeah. What equipment we use at home? Maybe even a bigger recommend than a positive review. So, there you go. So I will at some point probably begin comparing things to this, and if it stays on the desk, we will know. If not, I may go search out another Kone XTD. Time will tell.
Assuming you can get one, yeah. So, yeah.
Well,
yeah.
They're out there, but they, you know, like all products that are kind of on the edge of obsolete, you pay a premium price for them unless you buy a used one.
Yeah, that's very true. Speaking of new, there's new. Like, not old. There's new consoles coming out.
Oh, my gosh, yes. And the information has been flowing very quickly, which is interesting since we're all stuck at home. And I wonder if it's because the normal hardware review channels and release channels, or even the rumor channels, are not as prevalent as they would be in a normal year.
Maybe. Maybe not. I don't. That is kind of a weird, side effect of everyone having to work from home. I suspect that a lot of the much larger media channels that were, you know, like IGN, for instance, they have a big office where they just, you know, they'll have one new product and a whole bunch of people come in and use it and then go and write an article about it. It's not something where, in my case, I have to go and send a video card off to be reviewed, or here's a case, take some pictures and send it off. Where you get to actually physically use it and see it or test it. I mean, hey, video cards, I got all sorts of stuff around here. Just pull it down and use it. So,
well, I do feel like we're a bit in the minority in that we tend to spend a little bit more time on products before we write them up. Sometimes to the point where manufacturers wonder what we're up to.
Yeah, sad. So I have here a PlayStation 5 wiki guide, and it basically has the PlayStation 5 against the Series X, which is the two new consoles. I want to say that Xbox One was, 3 years ago? 2 years ago? Something like that?
Well, I feel like it could be even longer than that. Hmm. But I know that they've done a refresh on both the PlayStation 4 and the Xbox. So you've gotten at least one round of almost a tick-tock to that. They've done some improvements. They've done some shrinking, small form factor, that type of thing.
Yeah, that's true.
So that does tend to distort how long they've been out on the market. But these specs are starting to firm up to the point where we've had actual PlayStation news conference. We've had an Xbox news conference. And as you can see from these charts, and I'll give IGN credit, they've done a great job of gathering this information so we don't have to. And you can see there are a lot of TBAs as we're rolling through this, but the critical stuff, at least from a hardware enthusiast standpoint, are the core features that make this generation, I think, a lot more like a gaming PC. So let's take a look and see what you think here.
All right.
Maybe we can call a winner and a loser in this generation just from the specs. Who knows?
Possibly. All right. So RAM, we have 16 gigabytes of GDDR6, and this is the graphic GDDR. And I'm assuming that 16 gigabytes is what is allocated for the CPU, or, you know, the processing unit for the console. Down below, we have memory bandwidth. Now, as a video card person, I know that the memory bandwidth depends on two factors. One, how fast the memory is, and two, how much of it there is.
Yes.
So we have two sets here. In PlayStation 5 land, we have 448 gigabytes, or gigabits per second. And then on the Xbox side, we have two. We have a 10 gigabit and a 6 gigabit. So I'm going to say that we're going to have two versions of the Xbox. We're going to have the cheap one. Like in the past, they did one that had a smaller hard drive. And then they had a larger hard drive, and that was really the only difference. Well, now it looks like we're going to have video performance differences. One of them is going to have a 10 gigabit frame buffer for 560 gigabits a second speed. And then we're going to have a 6 gigabyte frame buffer with slightly slower speed. So it's
That's
kind
very
of
possible.
It's kind of bookending what they're rumored to have the PlayStation at.
So it's interesting, I think, that for PlayStation 5, they call out that the RAM is 256-bit.
Yes.
But they're both GDDR6, so, I mean, there's not much difference between GDDR6 and GDDR6.
No. Well, we have a 256-bit, so this is how wide the memory bandwidth is. So chances are what we have over here is 365 or whatever it is, and then we'll have whatever is less than 256. And this is how many chips it's interfacing is how wide the bus is going to be.
Interesting.
Different controller. So CPU, we have 8 Zen 2 cores at 3.5 gigahertz. And then we have 8 Zen 2 cores at 3.8 gigahertz or 3.6 gigahertz with an SMT. SMT is going to be the symmetric multi-transfer, basically hyper-threading.
Okay. So I immediately see Zen and go AMD, which is not a huge surprise.
Nope.
They won the battle to be the CPU for the next generations again.
Again. The thing to note here is that we have two types of CPU. We have one that is just at 3.5 gigahertz. No indication that it's going to have their hyper-threading at all. We have this other one where we have two speeds, 3.6 with the hyper-threading or 3.8. So there is a chance that I suspect we will have two versions again. The one with the faster video speed is going to have more faster cores.
Ooh, perhaps an Xbox Series X Pro.
Yeah, it could be. Because we do know that games run faster at higher frame rates, regardless of how many extra cores you have. GPU, here is where it gets interesting. This is you have to read this one here. We have the AMD Radeon RDNA Navi 10, which is a 28 teraflop, 36 computational units at 2.23 gigahertz. And it supports ray tracing, 3D audio, and Tempest Engine. On the Xbox side, we have the Navi 12, or the Navi with 12 teraflops, which is faster, 52 computational units at 1.825 gigahertz. And it supports DirectX ray tracing because Microsoft.
Word.
So we have a bit of, this is really where the differences are in the way I see it. We have a Navi with more processing power, more teraflops, with less computational units at a higher clock speed. Whereas on the other side, we have more computational units at a lower clock speed and, ironically, less performance.
Interesting. So you would say the higher speed with the lower CU count is the faster GPU in this generation.
Yes, the faster that, well, as we've seen in a lot of overclocking, you can take a CPU with less cores and actually make it faster than a CPU with more cores because the CPU itself has to run slower to run all those cores.
Interesting, okay.
And then the rest of the items are pretty much the same across the board until we get to the transfer speed. This is something that Darren pointed out to me. We have the 5.5 gigabits a second raw and 8.9 gigabits a second compressed on a custom 825 gigabit SSD. On the Xbox side, we have an NVMe drive that's 1 terabyte, but it's only transferring at 2.4 gigabits a second raw and 4.8 compressed. Somewhere we have some magical I/O going on here.
Oh, yeah.
So we have a custom SSD. Maybe this is two NVMe drives all rated together or something. But basically, the Sony folks are saying storage is king. Storage speed is kinger. You know, double king.
Well, yeah. And they've really touted this. Even in the early previews, the load speed of a PlayStation 5 game versus an identical PlayStation 4 game, These videos are worth seeking out because it's literally seconds to load a game where it could be up to 2 minutes on the older generation.
Yeah.
The difference in load speed is so quick that they're saying that you'll have seamless transitions in these games with these giant, large open worlds because they're so quick to load the data.
Wow. Maybe the loading screen will go away.
I'd like to think so, yeah. Or at least become tolerable. But that difference also transfers into the external storage, which is an interesting thing to have them tout, that the PlayStation 5 has NVMe SSD slot, can do USB HD, whereas the Xbox uses a proprietary external 1 terabyte SSD expansion card. So it does make me feel like, yeah, in USD 3.2, whereas the PlayStation doesn't say how fast the USB is, but yeah. I would imagine it's at least a 3.1. The difference here may be proprietary versus non-proprietary. In the past, PlayStation 5 has been really user-friendly about having you add or upgrade hard drives. Now, with this custom storage SSD, maybe not so much, but the fact that they're offering external storage that is more vague, I hope, is a sign that it's going to be an easy, user-replaceable, upgradable part. Whereas, once again, Xbox's external storage is proprietary and probably will be expensive and overpriced. But I'm only speculating.
Yeah, I'm having flashbacks of, what was it, the Dreamcast, where you had those cartridges that were proprietary and only could only use them on a Dreamcast. Maybe that was just a game cartridge, though. But anyhow, yeah.
Going through the rest of this, there's not a lot more to see. And when we do have stated things like the AV hookups, for example, the information is clearly incomplete, maybe for both sides. We know that they're going to do 4K, 8K. We know that they're going to do surround sound, whether they're calling out a specific brand or not. There's a nice look at the new controller that was just released a couple of days ago, the preview for the PlayStation on the right. I believe they're calling that the Sense X.
Oh, yeah.
DualSense, that's what it is.
It doesn't have real buttons, I think, right?
I've only seen some early news on it, but if you look at the controller features, they're pretty identical. Of course, there's built-in social media.
Mm-hmm.
One minor difference between the two is that the PlayStation 5 are rechargeable again. Yeah, the Xbox uses AA batteries. Now, we all know they came out on a lot of the generations with battery packs that could be replaced, so that may be the same.
Yeah.
Online and services, the rest is pretty much a wash.
Yeah, and I have the Xbox because I'm an Xbox kind of guy. And for how often I use the controllers, having AA batteries is fine. I'm not on it all the time, so maybe I'm also in a minority. So,
well, and we in my house, because my kids use their Xbox controller also on the PC, we have a set of rechargeable batteries by the TV so they can swap them out, just like we do with our VR system. So I am seeing that if that is the case with Xbox and you don't already have a rechargeable AA battery system, it's time to invest in a good one, maybe an in-loop system or something at that level.
Yeah. Now, with Xbox in general, they've always released a software patch to play an old game on the new console. A lot of times it was performance limited because it wasn't tuned for that new bit of hardware and what makes that hardware fast, but it did allow you to play the game sometimes slower and sometimes it didn't make a difference. Right. Are they still doing that with PlayStation?
Well, this is, of course, not confirmed, but the news is reporting very widely that one of the PlayStation's killer features from day one is they have researched the top 100 games, because they can tell what people are playing, over the last, I believe it's 2 years now, don't quote me on that, but some pretty long length of time, and they are trying to provide support, backwards compatibility, for all of those games. Now, it's not going to be 100% at launch. I think we're all pretty clear on that, because that's just the way history has worked for both consoles.
Mm-hmm.
But they were suggesting that it'll be somewhere between 60 and 80% will be 100% backwards compatible. And we're talking to the point where you can stick your disc from a PlayStation 4 or PlayStation 3 game into your PlayStation 5 and play it as if you're playing it in the old system. And this is something they haven't done for a long time. In fact, the first generation PlayStation 3 was the last time they attempted to do any kind of hardware backwards compatibility. Wow. And it wasn't great, and it was very limited.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Xbox is countering with a lot of vague promises that loosely seem to revolve around, you'll be able to play our older games through our cloud for our service.
Yeah, if you have Xbox Live and you buy a game, you have access to that game online, basically. So you should be able to pull down the new and tuned version. So Minecraft is a good example, right? So you'll be able to download a new version of Minecraft, ideally on the Series X, and have it play, and it should be good to go. But some of the older games like SRS Racing, which is something I really like playing on the original Xbox, right, chances are you can't get a patch to even get that to run anywhere. So,
well, I think, Dennis, as a big console guy, and we are pretty firmly in the PlayStation camp, it's nice to hear that backwards compatibility means that I can offset some of the cost of these consoles by selling my PlayStation 4 and my PlayStation 3 and moving to a single one. Now, the IGN article doesn't mention any prices because it's not very firm, but the rumors on the street are that they are trying to target under $500 for both of these machines. Mm. And whether that'll be true or not, of course, remains to be seen.
Yeah.
But looking at the level of hardware here, and thinking of this as basically a small gaming machine, I feel like there's no way that these machines at under $500 aren't basically going to start selling at a loss, which isn't uncommon for consoles.
No. These are actually, you know, it's an 8-core hyper-threaded, ideally small form factor computer. We have 16 gigs of memory. A good gaming machine has 16 gigs of memory. It's going to have a Navi GPU. You know, that is really where it changes from a desktop, because the desktop is going to have a lot more computational units than you can actually pack into a small form factor gaming box and still keep within the heat envelope. So,
well, we're not even talking about things like the 4K UHD Blu-ray drive. Both of them have the 4K, 8K native output. So this thing really can be a multimedia center for your system, which is what a lot of people, myself included, use their PlayStation 4s for today. And I know the Xbox is extremely popular for this as well, especially with the Xbox support in Windows 10.
That is true. And when we talked about the X-Bone originally, or Xbox One, we talked about how the PlayStation was really designed and marketed as a pure gaming machine. And on the Xbox camp, it was designed as a multimedia machine with gaming being secondary. We have a couple of Xbox Ones here that I play every once in a while, and they play games just fine. But they also will hook into the internet. They'll link up with your Windows 10 machine. So there's a lot more interaction that goes on between that entire ecosystem. So that part is good.
Well, looking at this, Dennis, to close us up here, do you see a clear advantage, disadvantage for these systems that would let us pick a winner in this hardware war, at least? Not counting, of course, the software and killer apps.
I was, being an Xbox person, I should lean toward the Xbox side, but the PlayStation 5 looks like it has a much better, more rounded bit of hardware compatibility. I mean, we have faster speeds across the board, and that's going to equal better performance. We have maybe not as much memory bandwidth, but we still have 16 gigs there, and we're going to have a faster GPU. We're going to have faster storage. That's what I'm going to call the winner.
Oh, wow. I'm impressed. Well, of course, time will tell, because we all have seen generations where the faster, better hardware loses out because the software library isn't there at launch, or there are bugs at launch, or just, I don't know, political climate. We'll see.
Mm-hmm.
But this is, of course, our first look. We may have more information for you in the future, but what I can tell you is if you're looking for either a PlayStation 5 or a Series X Xbox, it's probably time to start putting away those hard-earned bucks for your holiday budget.
For more information on the topics discussed in this podcast, please consult our show notes at hardwareasylum.com. Stay up to date on the latest at Hardware Asylum by subscribing to our RSS. Follow us on Twitter or like us on Facebook. This has been an Engine Lane production, copyright 2020. Thanks for listening.